16. His new office at Telemedia had been cleaned, swept, repainted, and his desk had been moved from the agency as a gesture of continuity. By 10 o'clock Monday morning, Alan had got the feel of things. He had sat in the big swivel chair, used the pencil sharpener, stood before the one-way viewing wall, covertly surveyed his building-sized staff. While he was stabilizing himself, Myron Mavis, looking as if he hadn't gone to bed, appeared to wish him luck.
"Not a bad layout," Mavis said. "Gets plenty of sunlight, good air. Very healthy. Look at me."
"I hoped you're not selling your hoofs for glue," Alan said, feeling humble.
"Not for a while. Come on,"
Mavis guided him out of the office.
"I'll introduce you to the staff."
They squeezed past the bundles of congratulatory flowers along the corridor. The reek of cryptoflora assailed them, and Alan halted to examine cards. "Like a hothouse," he said. "Here's one from Mrs. Hoyt." There was a bundle from Sue Frost, from Harry Pryor, and from Janet. There were gaudy bundles from the four giant agencies, including Blake Moffat. All bore formal greetings. Their representatives would be in shortly. And there were unmarked bundles with no cards. He wondered who had sent them. Persons in the housing unit. Perhaps little Mr. Wales, who had stuck up for him during the block meeting. Others from anonymous individuals who wished him luck. There was a dingy bunch, very small, which he picked up. Some sort of blue growth.
"Those are real,"
Mavis said.
"Smell them. Bluebells, I think they were called. Somebody must have dredged them up from the past."
Probably Gates and Sugarman. And one of the anonymous bundles could represent the mental health resort. In the back of his mind was the conviction that Malparto would be seeking to recover his investment. The staff quit work and lined up for his inspection. He shook hands, made random inquiries, spoke sage comments, greeted personnel he remembered. It was almost noon by the time he and Mavis had made the circuit of the building.
"That was kind of a bad scrape last night,"
Mavis said as they returned to the office.
"Blake Moffat has been after the directorship for years. It must hurt like hell to see you in."
Alan opened the file he had brought and rummaged for a packet. "Remember this?" He passed it to Mavis. "Everything started with this."
"Oh, yes,"
Mavis nodded.
"The tree that died. The anti-colonization morack."
"You know better than that," Alan said. Mavis looked bland.
"Symbol of spiritual starvation, then. Severed from the folk soul. You're going to put that through? The new Renaissance and propaganda. What Dante did for the afterworld, you're going to do for this."
"This particular packet," Alan said, "is long overdue. It should have come out months ago. I suppose I could start out cautiously, process only what's already been bought, interfere with the staff as little as possible, let them go the way they've been going, the low-risk approach." He opened the packet. "But..."
"Not but."
Mavis leaned close, put the side of his hand to his lips, and whispered hoarsely,
"The watchword is Excelsior."
He shook hands with Alan, wished him luck, hung lonely around the building for an hour or so, and then was gone. Watching Mavis shuffle off, Alan was conscious of his own burden, but the sense of weight made him cheerful. 7 with one blow, he said. "Yes, Mr. Purcell," a battery of intercoms responded as secretaries came to life. "My father can lick your father," Alan said. "I'm just testing the equipment. You can go back to sleep, or whatever it is you're doing." Removing his coat, he settled himself at his desk and began dividing up the packet. There was still nothing in it he cared to alter, so he marked it satisfactory and tossed it in the basket. The basket whisked it off, and somewhere down the long chain of command, the packet was received and put into process. He picked up the phone and called his wife.
"Where are you?"
she said, as if she was afraid to believe it.
"Are you?"
"I'm there," he said.
"How's the job?"
"Power unlimited." She seemed to relax.
"You want to celebrate tonight?"
The idea sounded good. "Sure, this is our big triumph. We should enjoy it." He tried to think what would be appropriate. "I could bring home a quart of ice cream," Janet said.
"I'd feel better if you told me what happened last night with Mrs. Frost."
There was no point in giving her grounds for her anxiety. "You worry too much. It came out all right, and that's what matters. This morning I put through the tree packet. Remember that? Now they can't bury it in dust. I'm going to transfer my best men from the agency, men like Harry Pryor. I'll trim down the staff here until I have something manageable."
"You won't make the projections too hard to understand, will you? I mean, don't put together things over people's heads."
"Nobody can say what's over people's heads," Alan said. "The aged in the stock formula material is on its way out, and all sorts of new stuff is coming in. We'll try a little of everything." Wistfully, Janet said,
"Remember how much fun it was when we started, forming the agency, hitting TM with our new ideas, our new kind of packets?"
He remembered. "Just keep thinking about that. I'll see you tonight. Everything's coming out fine, so don't worry." He added goodbye and then hung up.
"Mr. Purcell," his desk intercom said, "there are a number of people waiting to see you."
"Okay, Doris," he said.
"Vivian, Mr. Purcell,"
what sounded like a giggle.
"Shall I send the first one in?"
"Send him, her, or it in," Alan said. He folded his hands in front of him and scrutinized the door. The first person was a woman, and she was Gretchen Malparto.